This week, a crossroads for the economy.
But which way to go?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Bill Radke. This is the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. Welcome to the work week. It's Monday, October 4th. This week, we're going to get the government's monthly report on U.S. unemployment. It's the last jobs picture we'll see before the election, and it will help the Federal Reserve decide which way to take us.
Also ahead, the U.S. issues a travel alert because of possible terrorist attacks in Europe, and will Lincoln be the next upscale car to fade away? But first,
you know, today, Steve, I've been thinking of the Wizard of Oz.
Oh, really?
You know, where the part where Dorothy reaches the crossroads on the yellow brick road, and the scarecrow's up there, but he can't decide which way she should go.
Right.
This is exactly like that
today.
Precisely
I
like
understand.
That. I'm going to leave that thought right there for you while I introduce senior U.S. economist Julia Coronado at BNP Paribas. She joins us from New York. Hey, Julia.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. I don't want to call Ben Bernanke a scarecrow, but, you know, he's up there trying to scare away another recession, and he's deciding which way to go. Julia, tell us why this week is so important for that decision.
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, we get the employment report for September, and it is the last really significant data reading before the Fed meets to decide what to do in a couple of weeks. And what we've seen is the economy really getting stuck in a rut lately, and it was something that the New York Fed president called wholly unacceptable on Friday. So they're really looking for indications that we're getting unstuck and that they may not need to do something. Otherwise, I think they're going to move forward.
Wholly unacceptable, Batman. And the Federal Reserve is the big game now, right, Julia? Because no one's expecting much from the politicians before the election.
Absolutely. I mean, we've heard lots of proposals over the last few weeks from the president, from the Republicans. But really, realistically, nothing gets done until after the election. And even then, we're going to have a lame duck session until January. So probably not a lot of progress can be expected on the political front.
And quickly, Julia, what are basically the risks of the Fed overreacting now or underreacting?
Well, the risks of underreacting are that if the Fed doesn't do anything and the unemployment rate continues to rise, then we could move towards a double dip recession. We don't seem to be there or close to there now. But again, if the unemployment rate is rising, then people start losing faith in the recovery and retrenching and pulling back.
And overreacting, Julia?
And overreacting, I think the Fed risks losing its credibility. If the Fed acts and it doesn't work, then what good is the Fed? I mean, then we start seeing people lose faith in the dollar as a store of value. We start to see interest rates rising, making it more expensive to borrow.
Okay.
So there are risks on both sides for sure.
Julia Coronado at BNP Paribas, thank you.
My pleasure.
3M has told employees it's going to stop offering group health insurance to younger retirees. The Wall Street Journal reports the manufacturing giant sent out a memo that says federal health insurance reform has given retired people more options and made it difficult to compete. Add that to a threat by McDonald's to drop some worker coverage, and you have business starting to react to reform, trying to change the insurance landscape. Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith reports.
Healthcare reform laws will roll out over the next several years, and businesses are scrambling to get a handle on the new rules.
This bill is going to change the business model.
Len Nichols is the director of the Health Policy Research and Ethics Center at George Mason University.
Right now, part of what they're competing on is how good am I at selecting healthy people, and how good am I at negotiating discounts with providers.
Nichols says now insurers will be competing in other ways, like incentivizing healthy behavior. Melissa Thomason is a healthcare expert at Miami University. She says the laws will be hard on small businesses and companies that tend to offer cheaper, bare-bones policies.
Smaller insurers and businesses like McDonald's, who have pretty restrictive benefits policies, might see their cost of coverage grow up significantly.
George Mason's Len Nichols says the health care bill leaves a lot of specifics up to individual states, which could mean another layer of complication for businesses and insurers. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Verizon announced this morning it owes millions of customers a refund. Marketplace's Eve Tro is here to tell us why. Good morning.
Good morning.
Verizon admits it was overcharging customers. What for?
Well, about 2 years ago, Verizon customers started to complain about these mystery fees on their bills. A few dollars here, a few dollars there. These were data charges, but the people doing the complaining didn't have data plans. They weren't set up to search the internet or check email on their phones. So they shouldn't have had to pay those charges, but Verizon refused to take them off the bill. The Federal Communications Commission started looking into it last year. Now Verizon says, oh yeah, we messed up.
Messed up. What happened?
Well, they say that software that was built into people's phones automatically got on the internet when they touched this one button, and that triggered the charges. And maybe someone got online even though they didn't have a data plan, and the phone let them watch a video or something, then they got charged. But, you know, people who closed the program right away said, oh, oops, they also got charged. Verizon says, hey, that wasn't supposed to happen. It won't happen anymore, and we're going to give you your money back.
And how much money is that?
Quite a bit. Verizon expects to give back up to $90 million. That's divided between 15 million customers. Most of the refunds are just in the $2 to $6 range, but the FCC is still looking into this. They are looking at how wireless companies are getting a lot more money from going online, and they're watching it more closely.
That's Marketplace's Eve Tro. Eve, thank you.
Thanks.
Listening to the Midday Update for Monday, October 4th. I'm Steve Chiatakis. For the latest look at the markets, check out our website, marketplace.org, and go into the numbers section. And now the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics around the world and how it affects us here in the United States. Japan has followed the United States and Britain and issued a European travel alert after warnings of possible terrorist attacks there. The foreign ministry in Tokyo today, just like the U.S. State Department over the weekend, advised its citizens to be careful, to be vigilant when using public transit or visiting tourist attractions. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us from London with the latest. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
How much do we know about the nature of this terror threat?
Nothing very specific from official sources, but it's been reported here that the UK, France and Germany are most at risk, and that some British citizens of Pakistani origin and some Germans of Afghan descent may be planning a commando-style attack in crowded places, similar to those terrible attacks in Mumbai 2 years ago.
And how much impact, Stephen, will this have on European tourism?
Well, obviously, it isn't going to help. Now, this clearly is not a peak time for people to be travelling to Europe, especially from the US. But many Americans may be thinking about their vacation plans next year. Simon Calder, travel editor of the Independent newspaper, feels many may be deterred by this alert from taking a transatlantic holiday. And that, he says, would be terrible for European tourism.
US travellers are more adored than any other nationality because they spend more cash. It's going to be very grim news for thousands of workers in the tourist industry in Europe.
He says it's particularly galling for the tourist trade here since airlines and hotels have begun to report the signs of recovery from the economic downturn.
All right, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reporting from London. Stephen, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
This morning, Iraq announced there is significantly more oil underneath that country than first thought, 25% more. That would mean Iraq's oil reserves are second only to Saudi Arabia. Will that mean a gush of foreign investment? We asked Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer to take a look.
For years, embargoes and war kept Iraqis from getting a clear idea of how much oil they were sitting on. Now, underground rock formations are coming into focus thanks to new computer technology. David Hackett heads the energy consulting firm Stillwater Associates.
Now, with today's modern computers, they can actually look at it in three dimensions in order to help identify potential oil-producing structures.
Okay, you've got oil-producing structures, but the Iraqi government has no structure. In fact, Iraqis haven't been able to form a government since the elections last March, and violence has remained steady. But other oil-producing countries are also having problems with violence and politics. Stephen Shork of the Shork Report says they make Iraq look pretty good to foreign oil companies.
Iraq, especially with attainable oil, certainly makes sense at this point.
Especially if oil prices continue to go up. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Chinese Premier Wen Jiabao began a week-long tour of Europe yesterday. His first stop, Greece, where the premier promised China would continue to buy Greek bonds. Now, that's a morale booster for a country suffering under a mountain of debt. Marketplace China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz is with us from Shanghai with more. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning, Steve.
So there are signs that China's been buying up more European debt and shedding some of its U.S. debt as well. What's happening here?
Well, the European Union is China's biggest export market. But as we've seen, the economies of Greece, Spain, and Italy, just to name a few, are in a fiscal crisis right now. They need capital. China's willing to provide that capital because China knows that without it, these countries are going to run out of money. And if that happens, they won't be able to buy Chinese goods. So if you look at the deal Wen made in Greece, it kind of gives you an indication of where China's intentions lie.
Now, I read, Rob, that Wen announced this creation of a $5 billion fund to help Greek shipping companies?
Right. But Greece has to use that money to buy Chinese ships. So for Greece, this means more ships. For China, this means more jobs. And that's exactly what China needs.
Is it wise, Rob, for China to be buying the debt of countries such as Greece that are teetering on the brink of bankruptcy?
That's a great question. China's relatively new to this position as the world's bank, and some economists think China's inexperience may lead to some problems. But it's clear that Greece and the other debt-ridden EU countries are thrilled by Wen's visit. Last year, when Wen visited Europe, someone threw a shoe at him. Mm. It's probably a good bet European leaders are going to do their best to make sure that doesn't happen again.
All right. Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz joining us from Shanghai. Rob, thanks.
My pleasure.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Monday, October 4th. I'm Bill Radke, and you can check in on the markets by going to the numbers at marketplace.org. French pharmaceutical giant Sanofi Aventis launched a hostile takeover bid today for a smaller American biotech. Genzyme is developing drugs to treat high cholesterol and rare genetic disorders. Sanofi's bid values Genzyme at $18.5 billion. But why has Sanofi decided to pounce now, when one of Genzyme's most promising drugs is yet to be licensed? The BBC's Rebecca Singer has that.
Genzyme is developing drugs at the forefront of scientific research. It already sells medicines to treat rare genetic disorders that have been very successful. And that's attractive to big pharmaceuticals searching for the next blockbuster drug. One of those contenders could be Genzyme's experimental drug for multiple sclerosis, which is yet to be approved. Dr. Stephen Godwin is from the independent market research firm Synovate Healthcare. He says if the drug's successful, Sanofi Aventis will have got a great deal.
Genzyme probably has 25, 30, 35 projects, everything from early phase to late phase. So it's not, in a sense, a problem that these projects are in development. In fact, that's the opportunity.
But Godwin says there's a lot of risk associated with spending as much as $1 billion on developing a drug. Until it's officially released to the market, there's no guarantee the company will make its money back. Sanofi Aventis says it's gone directly to shareholders after Genzyme refused its initial advances, and those shareholders will now have until December to decide if they like the bid. In London, I'm the BBC's Rebecca Singer for Marketplace.
There's a pileup of town cars and Navigator SUVs today at the Ford headquarters in Dearborn, Michigan. More than 1,000 Lincoln dealers have been summoned to hear the company's plan for reviving the luxury brand. Now, Ford has sold off other upscale lines like Jaguar. It's shutting down Mercury, but Ford wants to reinvent Lincoln. Marketplace's Elisa Roth reports that could be a hard sell.
You know it's a bad sign when even the salesman can't talk up the car. Martin Bornstein runs a Lincoln Mercury dealership near New York City. He says people who want luxury cars don't want Lincolns.
You know, the people that say, I have a BMW, I have a Lexus. You know, they don't have a Lincoln. And they say you have a Lincoln, it's like you didn't make it yet.
That hasn't always been the case. 10 years ago, Lincoln was the best-selling luxury brand in the country. By last year, it had dropped to number 8, though. Lexus is on the top these days. Martin Goebbels has a Ford and Lincoln dealership in Wyoming. He says Lincolns have limited appeal.
I don't ever remember selling a Lincoln to anybody under the age of 45.
Ford is going after a younger crowd with a new ad campaign that emphasizes Lincoln's cool technology. The tagline is "Smarter than luxury." But the company also has to convince buyers that Lincolns really are different from their Ford cousins, that they're more than just a Taurus in a tailored suit. Ivan Drury is an analyst at Edmunds.com, the car buying site.
The argument always comes through, well, why am I paying so much extra for this vehicle that's, you know, 90% similar to the cheaper version?
Lincoln is overhauling its whole lineup, which dealers hope will make the cars easier to sell. But Lincoln's facelift is going to cost the dealers. Ford is reportedly planning to shut down 200 dealerships, and the survivors will have to make big investments so their showrooms are as luxurious as the cars. I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
It was 3 years ago this Sunday, the stock market hit an all-time high. You remember, Bill?
October 9th, 2007.
Mm-hmm. Did you mark it down? Did you say 14,164 for the Dow?
That's approximately what I had in mind, yes.
Really? That's, you put it on the refrigerator? You said, this is going to be the high?
No.
Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan says there are lessons to be learned about expecting too much from the stock market. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Steve.
Isn't it a little depressing to think about this anniversary, given the roller coaster ride the stock market's been on since?
Actually, it's very depressing. It's not a little depressing, but it's also educational, because life is educational, because from this high of 3 years ago, the stock market proceeded to fall something more than 50%. Then from the bottom, it rose 75%, and now it's down roughly 25%. But you could have really gotten killed if you bought at the wrong time, and made a fortune if you'd bought at the right time.
What impact, speaking of which, has the stock market drop had on the real world, Alan?
Well, part of it is something like $5 trillion of wealth has been vaporized, which affects how people and businesses behave. Mm. And people are scared and are now seeking safety, or what they think is safety, from the stock market.
All right, so $5 trillion, give or take. If there's been this flight to safety, as you say, Alan, among investors, where are they going?
Well, it's a flight to what they think is safety, which is bonds. And to them, I say, good luck, because I think you're going to need it. Interest rates are now abnormally low, and they're almost certain to rise. And if interest rates rise and you own bonds, your capital gets really whacked.
So, Alan, you mentioned education at the outset. I mean, what lessons can we take away from the last 3 years?
The first lesson is, even though over the long run, stocks have returned almost 10% a year, the return is extremely lumpy, and the market can be way up or way down for years at a time. The second lesson is that when you read the fine print and it says past performance is no guarantee of future performance, it's absolutely true.
Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan with us. Alan, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Steve.
And finally, the male erotic dancing troupe, the Chippendales. You've seen them, Bill, right? The Chippendales?
The Chippendales, yeah, yes. I was briefly a member.
I'm sure. Wanted to make sure no one would copy their brand. So they tried to trademark their costume, the bow tie, right, and the shirt cuffs.
The shirt cuffs.
But no shirt underneath, right? These guys are just bare-chested.
Right. And the trademark and patent office said, no, you can't trademark that. But an appeals court on Friday said, yeah, we agree. The Chippendales outfit is not distinctive enough to warrant a trademark of its own.
So the good news for those who check out the Chippendales, the devotees of the Chippendales, of course, is that as a Chippendale show goes on, Bill, there's less and less of a trademark infringement threat anyway.
This is true.
In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Bill Radke, and this is the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.